ain't the kind to wear a tie. Button up from 9 to 5. I tried that life but said goodbye. I'm not always polite, but I get the job done. Who says that work can never be fun? I'm simply unprofessional.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Simply Unprofessional. I'm your host Webby, and joining me tonight we got Devin.
Hey everybody, I'm Devin,
and today we're going to be doing a Guardians of the Galaxy 2 review. I saw this not last weekend, the weekend before. I actually saw it opening weekend. It's one of the few movies that I've actually went and saw opening weekend. So some of the more finer details might be a little hazy in my mind, and or which order they're in. Devin, you saw this, what, last weekend? Or did you go opening weekend?
I went opening weekend. I went Sunday.
Yeah. And I went that Saturday morning. So the movie starts off with the Guardians on this big platform. They were hired by a group of people called the Sovereign Race, a bunch of gold pricks, to pretty much guard some batteries, right? And then Star-Lord pulls out this old school handheld football game. It's an old Mattel game. And essentially, he was using that as a meter to see how close before that massive tentacle octopus monster came. All the while, Rocket was trying to set up music. Because, you know, they gotta have music when they're jamming. Then they argue a little bit about that. And this is all like kind of like during the beginning credits sequence. This is right before the beginning credits sequence. So the monster comes down, they all decide to start attacking the monster, and here comes Baby Groot, and he's going, he grabs both plugs, and he fiddles with the plugs for a minute, then he plugs it in, the music plays, and he just starts dancing all over the place. My favorite part of just the opening scene, honestly, was seeing Groot attack like the weird rat creature, and then ride it around. And then as soon as Drax landed on the music, and he got all pissed off with Drax and started, like, whipping him with little vines. And he did that later on in the movie, too. I like, just Baby Groot made the movie, I think.
Yeah, that's true. He did. He definitely made the movie. I love Baby Groot. I love Baby Groot.
I am Groot. So... was it you who told me that you had a part in the opening scene that you didn't care for?
I didn't care for it. It was just, I think it was a slight oversight. And it was based on the fact that when... oh, we probably should put this on there. Spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't seen this movie.
Super spoiler. Dude, our reviews, we're going to go step by step through pretty much the movie. So... if you haven't seen it and you don't want spoilers, too bad. I already spoiled the opening scene for you, but go watch the movie, pause the podcast. If you don't care about spoilers, keep listening.
Yep. Alrighty. So, my part I didn't like too much was when Drax got, you know, he's like, I'm going to fight it from the inside, and he jumps inside of the beast. And they're like, well, that's not going to work. That's not how skin works. He's just as tough on the outside as he's on the inside. And then not 5 minutes later, it's, hey, he has this cut in the outside of his skin. You should use his sword and slice him open. And I'm like, well, one of two things happened there. Either one, it wouldn't work, because for the same reasons you just said it wouldn't work a second ago when Drax jumped inside, Or two, your sword is 1,000 times more effective than those guns you were using, and you're wasting everybody's time when you could have just cut this thing in half hours ago. Those are the that was really the only hiccup I had at the beginning, but it wasn't even the movie was fun. Like I'm not even gonna pick it apart. Generally, the movie was just a fun movie. So even the little gripes, things like that, they're they're gripes. That's it. Like they're not. I'm not holding it against the movie. They're just little gripes.
Yeah, and I never hold any of those against any of the movies. I can probably find one with every Marvel movie that I've watched. I can find the little nitpicky things.
Actually, I know you have one later in the ending like trailer sequences. At the end credit scenes, you have one. I know we talked about.
So Devin, why don't you explain the next scene after they beat this monster? Rocket, you see Rocket talking to Drax, I believe, and he pockets some of these batteries that they're supposed to be protecting, and then they go and have like the little interaction with the head of the Sovereign Race. Why don't you explain a little bit about that?
Well, they have an interaction with the head of the Sovereign Race, and the Sovereign Race kind of acts exactly like they sound, like their name would suggest. They act kind of uppity assholes. You know, everything they say has a slight tinge of a backhanded compliment. And Rocket, they're basically walking down the lane, and, you know, and Quill's like, hey, Star-Lord's like, hey, let's not piss them off, because they'll kill us. And what does Rocket do? Starts giving them lip. Pisses them off, steals their batteries. Words are exchanged, and basically they get ushered out of there.
I love it. I love it when Rocket's talking to them and he's just winking, and it's a very obvious wink. And he does this throughout the movies, and he's just like, "Oh crap, that was supposed to be with my right eye," as if that would make a difference.
Right. Right. He's didn't at one point too? Did he like say like, "Wait, did I say that? Did I say that out loud?"
Yes.
At one point, like, he's like, yeah, I thought he said that too. And I love it. Like, I love it. Sidebar note to Guardians of the Galaxy. I never would have actually pictured Bradley Cooper
as Rocket.
Yeah, but now I can't think of anyone else but Bradley Cooper as Rocket.
Yeah, same. So after they leave the, I forget what fucking planet it is, doesn't matter, bunch of gold people. They leave, and they start taking off, and that's when, you know, Peter finds out that, you know, Rocket stole some batteries, and, you know, he says, oh, what the hell did you do that for? They're going to be on our ass. All of a sudden, a bunch of drones show up, a bunch of spaceships, which I thought was kind of a cool twist on piloting spaceships. They did it like an old school, like arcade game. Sorry about that. People are messaging me. I should not be paying attention to anything. So people weren't actually in these ships, although it cuts back and you see these people like, they're on like those arcade games where you're like on the motorcycle and you're hunched forward and you're moving back and forth left and right, and then their screen is right in front of them, which is a cool twist, I think, because hey, if you can afford to have a shit ton of drones, why put people at risk? You know, you just pilot them remotely from somewhere else. So they go through a little intergalactic getaway chase scene. They end up going through was it an asteroid field or a meteor field or something like that? And Rocket and Peter Quill are fighting over who's the better pilot and who can get them through this asteroid field. And everyone, you see it coming when two pilots are fighting over who's better and keep taking control back and forth of the ship. They eventually hit something. And they make it through the asteroid field, and then a bunch more of those drones show up. And just as they're still trying to run, and they're trying to decide what the closest planet is to land on, Rocket looks out the window, all these droids blow up. All those drones blow up. And there's just one dude standing on a spaceship. And I think was this the part where there's like one drone left on their ass? And that's where Drax decided to hook himself up to the cable and just jump out of the back of the ship?
Yep, that's that part right there.
So he's just kind of dangling out behind the ship on a metal cable. And then they decide, okay, well, we're going to go in for a crash landing. And Drax doesn't pull himself in. And the whole way down, you just see him hitting tree after tree after tree, and then just slams into the ground. And he thought it was the funnest fucking thing ever. I don't know much about Drax's character in particular. Is he like impenetrable? Like, is he invulnerable to damage, like, say, a Colossus or a Juggernaut or even like the Hulk?
Yeah, I think he's actually, I know in the comics at different points in the comics, he is the holder of the power gem.
Oh, really? He ends up getting a gem, huh?
Yeah, he actually was the guardian of the power gem for a while. And then for whatever reason in this, they just didn't address that. So I don't know if he's ever actually had the gem or is that going to be playing into like maybe 3 or later.
Right.
But I think without it, I think his race is still supernaturally strong, or like super strong, durable. Super durable.
Yeah.
I think he's the, well, Groot is actually the powerhouse of the team, but I think he's kind of the brick of the team, for sure. I think he definitely is. Like, I can do some research while you keep talking and let you know.
Okay. In any case, also for the listeners, if you're curious, the power, when Devin referred to the power gem, that is one of the Infinity Stones. So they crash land on this planet. Now, I didn't connect the dots until I read one of the articles after I'd seen the movie. The planet that they crash landed on, I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head. All these planets had really fucked up names. But apparently, this was the planet that the Hulk was on during Planet of the Hulk, when he became a gladiator. Is the same planet that they crash land on, which was a nice little nod to other Marvel movies and just showing that connection that they have. So once they crash land, they realize, hey, the ship's pretty fucked up. Rocket's going to get on, you know, fixing it, Rocket and Groot. And they're all standing outside talking, and they're starting to camp outside. This was one of my favorite interactions between Peter Quill and Rocket Raccoon, was they started arguing outside, and he called him a raccoon, and Rocket takes extreme, what's the fucking word I'm looking for? And he takes it as an insult, being called a raccoon. So then Peter's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean raccoon. I didn't mean raccoon at all. I meant Garbage Panda. And that, dude, that made me laugh so hard. And then no one knew what Garbage Panda was. Drax was inquiring, and Peter's just like, it's way worse. It's so much worse. So I like how they take little jabs at each other every chance they get. And then the ship shows up. And it's the ship that's piloted by the one dude. But you find out there's really two. It's the same guy that Rocket saw. And now we're introduced to Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell, I thought, played a phenomenal job in this movie. He did a great job. And he played Peter Quill's father, portraying as Ego, the living planet. And, you know, there's some interaction between Peter believing him and then Gamora talking to him. Anyway, they decide that it would be good to just at least go and see what's up. So, we got an addition here, folks. This doesn't happen very often. Let's see if I can, let's see if I can do this without fucking shit up.
Live in living color. Let's see
live
who we're getting.
Living color here.
I don't even know who we're getting, guys. This is new to me. Look who it is.
Look who it is.
You got me.
Listeners, you just won the lottery. You got Austin.
back by popular demand.
BPD.
I'm not saying he was your only choice, but I will say this, that when you picked your starter Pokemon, you chose him, you chose right.
Yeah, right. You chose an Ostmander.
So Austin, I like it. We're doing the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 review, and we just got to the point where they crash landed on the planet. Kurt Russell shows up saying that he's Peter's dad, and then I was just getting to the point where they decide to do what you should never do in D&D, split the party.
I was just about to correct myself once Webby's done with this.
They end up going with Peter, Gamora, and Drax, all go with Kurt Russell, and they're going to go visit Ego's... He says it's Ego's planet. Ego is the planet. That's the thing that we find out in a little while. For all you Kong nerds out there, you already knew this. And then they decide to leave Rocket, Groot, to fix the ship and guard over somebody that we also neglected to mention that they had on board with them, Nebula. That's the whole reason that they were contracted to guard the batteries in the opening credit scene was their payment was Nebula, which is Gamora's sister. So she's a prisoner at this point. Go ahead and correct yourself, Devin.
Yeah. So for some reason, I got two people confused. Drax did not have the gem. He did fight Thanos for it. It was the the champion of the universe? He had it. I got those two confused for some reason.
Yep,
champion had it. I got those two confused. But yeah, Drax is, didn't get it wrong. Drax is super natural. He is super strong. His race is, even before he was powered up, could lift somewhere like 40 tons or give or so. And he was definitely bulletproof at that point.
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, after this power up, he's one of the people in comics that kind of fluctuate up and down here and there.
Yeah.
So you kind of get those hurt.
I didn't really know anything about any of the Guardians before the movies. I like to think that I'm a casual comic book nerd because, like, I don't get in depth as a lot of people, even a lot of people like on these podcasts. But
and there's nothing wrong with that, man. Even like, it's been years since I've been hardcore into the comics. So I would probably categorize myself similar to you as more the casual comic book nerd right now. I will see all the movies. I will read up on all the lore. But like, I don't remember the last time I actually went and bought a comic book. I think, honestly, I think the last comic book that I bought was the Infinity Wars. So that's because Thanos is my homeboy. Got to root for the big guy. So I forget. I think we stay. No, this is where we, now we skip over and they cut to Yondu. At this point, I believe, after the party splits. And Yondu's waking up from what you can only guess to be some form of an intergalactic whorehouse. I'm guessing. I don't know. It looked like he had, like, robot hookers in his room who just decided to, like, power down. It's so weird. I don't know what else they could have been. And then he looks out his window, and somebody I didn't expect to see, for all you Sons of Anarchy fans out there, Chibs, motherfucking Chibs, was down outside telling Yondu, hey, come on outside. And it was fucking snowing, so I automatically hate this planet. But yeah, I was super excited to see Chibs.
Chibs was riding for Yondo. That was his boy.
Hell yeah.
That was...
So, Yondu walks outside. Now, Yondu was part of the Ravagers. Mm-hmm. But in this scene, we see, I believe it's before the gold chick shows up again, another just bomb-dropping cameo. Like, first there's Chip, the guy who plays Chibs.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, fucking Sylvester Stallone. It's like, who the fuck is this? Why are you in this movie? He plays one of the captains of the Ravager community. And they start talking about how Yondu is exiled from the Ravager community. And you find out that it's all from child trafficking, which is something that the Ravagers do not do. It's against their code. Even though they're essentially a bunch of thieves and bandits, they're, every group has a code of some fashion. And child trafficking, big no-no. But we find out later on that there's reasons for this. And then, as he's walking away, I think this is when the gold chick shows up. I don't remember her name. I always called her the gold bitch, because I just, looking at her, I get angry. Like, she just, she looks so pompous.
Yeah.
Just their whole race does. It bothers
Aisha.
Aisha.
Name is Aisha.
Okay. Yep. That sounds like a pompous name. Sorry if we have any listeners out there named Aisha. I hope
you're cool.
I hope you ain't pompous. So here's this Aisha chick. She's walking slowly as these two other motherfucking gold people are rolling out this rug on a snow planet. It's such a waste of carpet. I don't even know. And then they do this little thing where like it gets stuck for a minute, and then they wait, and then it finishes rolling out. In any case, she wants to hire Yondu. Essentially to go and I think, was it to capture the Guardians or was it to just eliminate them? I think it's to capture them, yeah.
I think she gave him the order for either, or it was to capture if she wanted to kill them or something like that.
Okay. Either way, she wants the Guardians, so she wanted him to go get them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think straight from here, they cut back to... Is this where they cut back to Rocket, or do they do the thing on the ship first? Where you get introduced to Mantis. I honestly don't remember the...
I don't remember the order. Hold on.
They didn't do the Rocket thing yet, because
This is the part with seeing it 2 weeks ago, folks, is it's not exactly in my mind. We'll jump to the ship first. So on this ship, it was literally just Ego, and then Ego's, I guess, pet/caretaker?
Oh, yeah. It was this part first.
So, this is where we get introduced to Mantis, played by, and I'm probably gonna fucking butcher this name, Palm Clementife? So she explains to the Guardians, or to Quill, Drax, and Gamora, that she has powers involving empathy. She has empathic powers. She can feel what other people are feeling. She can even slightly manipulate how people are feeling. And so she starts off by asking Peter if she'll indulge everyone and let her use her powers on him. So she grabs his hand, and she starts saying how he has a strong physical attraction and love towards Gamora. And here comes Dave Bautista playing Drax, just starts gut laughing and pointing at Peter Quill.
Didn't he do good in this movie? Like...
Oh, I think everyone did such a good job in this movie.
Yeah.
Dave Bautista was so great, such comedy relief. And don't get me wrong, he was funny in the first one,
mm-hmm.
but I think he was way better. He seriously stepped it up for this one.
Yeah.
just his interactions with everybody. There is not a scene with Drax in it that I did not like. And he starts telling Peter how that must be so embarrassing and how she read all of his deep, dark secrets and all this other stuff. And then he wanted to turn next, so he holds out his arm and Mantis grabs his arm and she looks at Peter, points at him, and then she just starts laughing. She then wanders over to Gamora and tries to do it on her, and Gamora says that she'll promptly rip off her antennas, and she threatens her with bodily harm, as Gamora would.
Mm-hmm.
Then I don't think they make it to the planet yet. I think this is when we cut back to Rocket. So you see a bunch of Reavers.
This is probably my favorite scene of the movie.
This is definitely one of mine. This shows you how much of a badass Rocket really is.
Yeah.
People might look at the Guardians and say, oh, Rocket's just the tech guy. He's not really that great. This scene proves it wrong.
Yeah.
You'll see a bunch of Reavers, and I'm talking dozens and dozens of Reavers, walking through this forest, and all the while they hear Rocket whistling on the ship, and Rocket's supposed to be on the ship fixing it. And as they're approaching, you see Rocket up in a tree, and he's watching them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then he set off a bunch of various traps for these guys. He knew they were coming before they even knew that they were aware. There was one where a bunch of darts just shot across and hit everybody and made them pass out. He threw down, like, a couple anti-gravity mines where every time he pushed a button, they would fly up in the air, and then he'd push it again, and they'd slam into the ground. He did this to two different groups. He took out two guys who had him at, you know, gunpoint with his crazy-ass raccoon moves. But, sadly, he hears the whistling of Yondu, and he gets surrounded. And then I think it's Yondu, one of Yondu's second-in-commands, or one of Yondu's lieutenants, or whatever, says, hey, we should kill them now, or, you know, whatever, and Yondu doesn't want to do that. I think Yondu has a soft spot for the Guardians, all in all.
Mm.
But it seems like every time, and I think this would make for a bad Reaver, I think, or Ravager. I'm getting two movies mixed up here. Yondu, every time he makes a contract with somebody, he breaks that contract and decides to do something else. And it's just, that's not good business, but it works out for him.
Actually, it directly led to what happened to him in this particular scene.
Yeah. So as they're discussing it, I believe this is where an argument starts happening between the two sides, and they're talking mutiny, and just as Yondu is about to whistle to, you know, make his arrow go and deal with whatever threat it is, you just see the little mini faux hawk thing, the cap that he has, the fin on the top of his head, gets fucking blown the hell off. And then Nebula's standing there with a gun.
I was going to say, that shit was crazy when that happened. I was like, is he dead?
Yeah, I thought he was dead. But then you see it's all mechanical up there, and it's some form of an implant. And then essentially these Ravagers, along with Nebula, take Baby Groot, Rocket, and Yondu back to their ship as prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we find out that, first off, fucking Chibs, who we were so excited about two scenes ago, gets automatically tossed off the ship and died. He one of the shortest lifespans for a cameo I think I've ever seen. But it was good to see him. But then we get introduced to the new leader of these Ravagers on this ship. An ugly motherfucker named Taserface. Which just sends Rocket into a laughing spree about how absolutely fucking stupid this guy's name is. This scene is actually one of the scenes that kind of tugged at my heartstrings a little bit. I felt really bad. Once they decide, hey, we're not going to kill them anymore, we're going to just lock you guys up and deal with you. You see what they were going to do. They had Baby Groot in a cage at first. Then this one dude was just kept shaking the cage and tormenting Baby Groot. They ask what you're going to do with him. So then the next scene, you see him and he's wearing like a Ravager, little baby Ravager outfit. And they're just like pushing him around and dumping beer and shit all over him. And they're essentially just fucking with him. That really hurt. Yeah. Fuck those guys.
Yeah, fuck.
Then there's the whole scene where Baby Groot's walking by their cage, and they want to break out, so they try to explain to Baby Groot that there's another fin for Yondu's head in the captain's quarters. And it looks like this, and it's called this, and like four or five times, Baby Groot comes back with something different. One of the times, I think it was an eye. Was it an eyeball this time?
Yeah, it was the dude's eye.
Yeah, and it was like a mechanical implant with an eye.
I love the tins of mints.
Yes. And then Rocket's like, no, 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 leave the eye. And Yondu's like, why? He's like, because he's going to wake up in the morning, he's not going to have an eye. And that's hilarious. Rocket, easily one of my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually on the last go around, you see this fin. Now this fin is more akin to what Yondu has in the comic books. In the comic books, he has this big, tall, motherfucking red mohawk looking fin. And that's essentially what this one looks like. And this one was brought back with Groot and, Yondu's second in command, Kraglin. I think his name is. They eventually free Yondu and Rocket. And then they start going towards a, what I'm guessing is like a security office of some fashion. Where there's just a ton of monitors that shows every last bit of this ship. And the whole time they're just, Yondu's just whistling and here goes this arrow just impaling everybody. And he's taking out tons of dudes.
This was my favorite scene in the movie.
And then, right before they make it to the little security room, fucking Baby Groot, he saw that motherfucker who poured beer on him. He chased him down, and the guy ran away in fear, and Baby Groot decided to slam him into the railing, and then he fell off, and Baby Groot murdered somebody. Poor innocent Baby Groot now knows what it's like to take a life. In any case, so they make it to the room with all the cameras. And this is where shit got real. Because Yondu, all he had to do was keep looking at the various different cameras and monitors. Just keep whistling. And he pretty much took out every single person on this ship. With the exception of Taserface at first. I will note that before all this did happen, there was a small scene between Kraglin and Nebula where Nebula decided to leave. She took one of the Ravager ships along with some payment or whatever, or payment was promised to her. And she explained that she was off to find Gamora because they're sisters and she wanted to kill her. Because essentially Nebula's big thing is she just blames Gamora for everything that Thanos did to her. Now For the listeners who don't know much about the comics, Nebula is mostly, at this point, mechanical. because Thanos, who's her father and along with Gamora, used to have Gamora and Nebula fight each other, which this is a long dialogue that happens later on in the movie. And every time Nebula lost, because, you know, Gamora's better than she is, every time Nebula lost, Thanos would take a part of Nebula and replace it with mechanical parts, thinking that that would make her better. So now Nebula's mostly mechanical. In any case, she takes off. Yondu takes control over a portion of the ship, and they end up escaping. Then we cut back to Ego and his planet, and he's teaching Peter about what the planet is, what he is, explains a little bit about how he met his mother, and this is where the bomb drops, at least for the comic book fans, that apparently Ego is a Celestial. In the comics, Celestials are supremely powerful beings that live inside of planets. I did not think that Ego was one of them. I know Ego was a universal entity, but I didn't think he was a Celestial. They might have just added that thing for the movie. And then he appeals to Peter in every fashion that he can. He explains to him that he had to leave his mother to come back to this planet, or else the planet would die, or he'd lose his powers or something. This planet, though, pretty rockin'. Especially seeing as though it's him. And he teaches Peter that he has these powers, too. He's half-celestial. So then there's this really cheesy-ass scene where Peter makes a little energy ball, and him and Kurt Russell play catch out in a field or whatever. Austin, you have something to say about that?
No, let him do it.
Are you crying?
Yeah.
So then we cut to a scene. It's still on the same planet. I don't even know what order we're in anymore. There's Drax and Mantis. And he starts talking about just his past or something. And then Mantis takes it as a compliment and how he thinks that she's beautiful. And he starts going, no. Oh, hell no. You are ugly as fuck. And I thought this was so funny.
Yeah, it was.
The way Drax treats Mantis, it's like he cares, but he just is repulsed by her.
He's like, you are beautiful. You think I'm beautiful? No. On the inside. You're hideous.
There's one scene where he's laying down later on when Mantis tries to wake him up to inform him of some stuff. She wakes him up, and he immediately turns from her and starts gagging. She's like, what is it? Are you okay? He's like, I'm imagining what it would be like to be with you physically. It's like, oh my god, Drax. Oh, it's so gnarly. So, alright, take it away, Austin or Defin here. We're on a planet. This is right about where Nebula. We'll start with where Nebula arrives on the planet.
You crazy bitch? Jesus.
She just wrecked through the shit, didn't she?
She just came on through. Like, you know, it's funny. You would have to kind of imagine, like, you know, him being the planet, he would know everything going on the planet.
Mm.
So, like, you know, her just coming in. Guns a-blazing. It's like a nice, peaceful, quiet scene. Then we see this ship coming in. And she just comes in guns a-blazing. She really, really wants that revenge.
Yeah.
I mean, she crashed into a cave to get it. It was, yeah, I mean, Nebula, I love Nebula as a character. She's absolutely batshit insane. Totally justifiably batshit insane, but batshit insane nonetheless.
Yep. And then there's a pretty good fight between Nebula and Gamora after the little chase scene. Doesn't last too long. Gamora pretty much puts her in a place. Then we find out, you know, Nebula just wants a sister, man. She doesn't want an opponent all the time. That's the reason she hates Gamora. And then this is where you get the dialogue where it's, you know, Thanos replacing her body parts and so on and so forth. And then Mantis, this is the part after this scene, I think this is the part where Mantis
then, Did you tell that Gamora saved Nebula?
Right. Like, pulled her out of a flaming ship.
Yeah.
Although do think it was super badass once Nebula crashed the ship and was in there. Fucking Gamora, who apparently is super strong. Like, I didn't know super strength was on her list of character traits. Picks up this giant fucking cannon, right, the Gatling gun off of the ship, right? And it looks like it's, I don't know, 4 times bigger than Drax.
Mm-hmm.
She just hoists this thing up on her shoulder, and she hot wires the thing on the side and just starts blasting away at this ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sees Nebula stuck in a flaming wreckage of a ship and pulls her out, saves her life. Then this is where I believe Mantis goes and she does the thing where she wakes up Drax to warn him. She was about to warn him earlier on the steps about Ego's plan and what Ego really is, but Gamora kind of interrupted, which I believe Gamora and Nebula also interrupt this too, but she still ends up spilling the beans. I think this is where we find out that Yondu, like, Peter isn't Ego's first and only child. Yondu was actually hired by Ego to bring him all of these children that Ego has had, in hopes that one of them shared the celestial trait, because what Ego wants to do requires more power. It requires more power than even he has by himself. So essentially, he would get these kids, realize that they didn't have the trait, and he'd kill them because they were useless to him. I think Yondu kind of grew wise to this fact, which is why he just took Peter and didn't deliver Peter to Ego.
Yeah.
So that shows you right there that Yondu does have a conscience. So in any case, Mantis kind of warns them, hey, you know, he's just going to use Peter, and this is kind of what his plans are. And then we cut to a pretty cool scene where Ego and Peter, and he's showing them all these pictures, and then gives him, kind of touches his forehead, and you see Peter's eyes go over dark and starry-eyed. It's like you can almost see the universe in his eyes. They mention Eternity in this scene, which is a cosmic being in the Marvel Universe who actually is the embodiment of everything. He is the embodiment of the galaxy, essentially. And Peter's on board with this. Like, he kind of understands, and, like, he's agreeing with everything that Ego is throwing down as far as, like, this is what we need to do. We need to, you know, reshape. We can reshape the universe, and we can be everything and everywhere and all-powerful. And then Ego fucks up, man. Dunn fucks up. And he says that's, you know, he mentions that's one of the reasons why he had to give Peter's mom cancer.
Yep.
And then Peter instantly snaps out of it. He looks at Ego, and then I believe just starts blowing him away. Just pulls out his guns and just starts shooting.
Yep.
Yeah. Light that bitch up.
Yep, he fucks up Ego hard. Pretty much leaves almost nothing left of that physical body. All the while, Yondu, Rocket, Groot, and Kraglin are in like some mining fucking spaceship buggy thing, and they're on their way down to the planet.
And they're jumping like
Oh yeah. So when they jump from planet to planet, think of it like a Star Wars. What's it called in Star Wars? Hyperspace. I don't remember. You go super fast.
What? Like
super speed. Warp speed.
Warp speed.
That's Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Warp speed, Mr. Wolf.
Light speed. Light speed. I don't think that's it. How do we not know this? We have a Star Wars podcast.
Yeah, well, that's on you.
That's me.
Yep, that's you.
I fucked up.
In any case, Yondu explains the rocket, you know, you can only make like 4 jumps before it really starts fucking with you. And Rocket's like, yeah, I know. Because they would jump straight to Ego's planet.
Talking about hyperspace? Hyperspace when they go into hyperspace in Star Wars?
Is that what they call that?
Jump to light speed.
Make the jump to hyperspace. They call it hyperspace, I'm pretty sure.
All right. In any case, I don't remember how many they say.
They say 50 and you start to feel weird. And they did 1,000.
Yeah, they did like some dumb, insane number. They
specifically said anything more than 50 is unsafe.
Yeah.
Not just feel weird, it's unsafe. Yeah. They just did like up 1,000, what was it?
Yeah. So as you see this ship jumping back and forth, you look over and Yondu's face starts warping and stretching and warping. And then they cut over to Rocket and Rocket's face is all fucked up. And you see them jumping through space. And then they jump past a planet where, just like every other Marvel movie, you have Stan Lee, who essentially is sitting on what looks like a giant throne made out of stone. And he's talking to the Watchers. Mm-hmm. He's telling them a story. I believe, if I remember correctly, he was telling them of a story of back when he worked for FedEx.
Well, do you want to know the Easter egg behind this?
Well, in Captain America Civil War, that's when Stan Lee worked for FedEx.
Yeah.
Now, there's a theory behind this.
It's confirmed.
They've never confirmed the theory.
What's his name? Well, if it's the one I'm thinking of, the dude that overruns all of Marvel, he confirmed it right after the movie came out.
It's a fan theory, but Marvel endorses the fan theory.
Right. But I don't think they've confirmed it and said, yes, this is exactly what it is. If I'm wrong, Austin, I would love to see that article. But the ongoing theory is that Stan Lee is one of the Watchers.
Oh,
honestly, I think he's just the one above all. Like, he is in the actual comic book because he takes that form anyway in the comic book. So, I mean, I think that's me personally. I just think that's what he is in the actual universe, because it's like some of those movies are supposed to be taking place around the same exact time, but he's all over the place.
Right.
So you're like, how is he all over the place at the exact same time in all these different cities?
But see, technically, Watcher could do that.
A
Watcher is technically... See, the whole role with the Watchers are also cosmic beings. When we get into the Guardians of the Galaxy, we start seeing a lot of the cosmic beings in the Marvel universe.
Which arguably is like that's my punching level. I'm good at that.
Yeah.
Cosmic. On Marvel, I read a lot of, you know, cosmic and a lot of street level. That's where I'm at.
Right. So like, I believe in one of the previous movies, it might have even been Doctor Strange. We got to see the Living Tribunal. They reference him. I know that. This movie, you get the Celestial reference. You get the Watchers. The Watchers' main role is they are cosmic beings who literally just watch everything. They are not to interfere. They don't get involved with anything. They just sit and watch.
Yeah, and they come to, like, the big, like, any big event in Marvel, they'll be there.
Yes, exactly.
I think, don't some of the heroes start to figure it out that if a Watcher's there, this is, like, a catastrophic event for, or not catastrophic, but a huge event for the universe. A huge event's
about to happen.
Yeah.
Which, so, I thought that, and I mean, I could be completely wrong, I thought that the giant stone, it looked like a stone chair to me anyway, the giant stone chair that Stan Lee was sitting on when he was talking to the Watchers, mm-hmm. I thought that looked a lot like the stone chair that Thanos was sitting on when he was on his small little rock.
Yeah, when he was talking to that one dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that did, that reminded me of it.
Which could lead you to just, oh, okay, obviously Thanos, we know, is a big thing that's coming. Now we see the Watchers. Now we know that something big is going to happen very, very soon. Which, anybody who knows about the movies knows that Infinity Wars is happening, and that's all about Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
In any case,
it's one of the more huge things that happened in the Marvel 616 universe.
So we got to see the Watchers.
But that's not the rumor I was talking about.
What was the rumor you were talking about?
The rumor I was talking about was that he, well, I mean, it kind of relates to it, that he is the same person in all of those cameos, and he's telling the Watchers about him, about that.
Right. And, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what Kevin Feige, the dude that overruns Marvel, that's what I read that he confirmed.
Right. And that would even give more weight to the fact that he's a Watcher, mm-hmm. is if he is the same character in all of these different roles, and he's recording and telling these stories back to the Watchers, that would just show that, you know, that would give more weight to the fact that, hey, maybe he is a Watcher.
Yeah.
So in any case, they make all these space jumps. They survive. Spoiler alert. And just as Ego is reforming his body,
I think he's already electrocuting.
Yeah, he has
Star-Lord.
He has Peter pretty much stabbed and essentially using him as a giant battery and just drawing power from him. Here comes Gamora, Drax, Mantis, and then all of a sudden Rocket. Pretty much just as soon as his body is rebuilt and Peter's starting to fight back, Rocket slams into him with the ship. And crushes them. Then they all decide that they're going to GTFO. And as soon as they pilot their way out of the ship, Yondu asks, you know, you're going the wrong way, because Peter starts going down instead of up. And that's when Peter says, hey, you know, there's a brain at the center of this thing. We need to destroy that. Otherwise, this isn't going to stop.
Well, I think, what's her name says it?
Mantis?
Mantis. She tells him, like, he's inside.
Yeah. So they go down inside, and then right at the same time that Peter decides, hey, they're gonna go into the center of this planet, a shit ton more of those drones from fucking the Sovereign Race, those gold people, show up. And they all spiral down into the planet as well. So now there's just going to be a big, epic fight down in the center of this fucking living planet. This is where we get the scene from the trailer where you get Rocket explaining the bomb to Groot. Before that, one of the coolest things I saw, I loved this part, because they're in a mining spaceship. And the way that this spaceship mines is it has a bunch of these small little balls that move into an area, shoot out a laser, and rotate. And that's what chews through whatever it is that they're trying to cut through. All of these gold ships come around, and... Oh no, it wasn't this part. That was when they hijack Nebula, helps them out. So... Rocket and all of them bail out of this ship to the brain. They start chewing through, you know, they get through the part that they tried to drill through, and Rocket's like, hey, man, I'm too big to even fit through this hole. So then they leave it up to Baby Groot. Then you get 5-minute dialogue between Rocket and Baby Groot about, you flip this switch, you flip this switch, you push this button, do not push this last button. If that's the case, why even have the fucking button on there? Like, why did Rocket put that there to begin with?
I have a better question on that. He asked for tape at one point, which I'm sure you're going to get to in a second. But how do you tape down a button you're not supposed to push?
Right. I mean, I guess technically, I guess you could tape around it. So that way you can't, like, put it at an angle where you can't really push it down because the tape is being too sticky and it won't let you push it down. But...
Theoretically, you have to, like, cover it with, like, something hard and then tape that over the button.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, I do love the part where he asks us for tape.
I like how, like, you hear Peter going around asking each of the members individually, like, do you have tape? No, I don't have tape. And then he asks Drax, he's like, hey, do you have any tape? Yeah, scotch tape will work. Then why'd you offer it? You know, like, he doesn't have scotch tape on him.
I love how Drax knows what scotch tape is.
Right. And then he comes back to Rocky. He's like, hey, nobody has tape. He's like, did you ask Nebula? And Peter's just like, yep. Like, she's the one person he didn't ask for tape. And then all of a sudden, you see Baby Groot grab the thing, and he just goes running off. And... Rocket just shrugs and he's like, eh, we're all gonna die. That's neat. So all these drones are around, right? Hundreds and hundreds of these things. This is one of the coolest things I saw in this movie. Yondu and Nebula are both in this mining ship. Well, all these drones they're blasting away at the ship. They're trying to shoot down everybody else. So Yondu connect, like, Nebula connects herself to the ship. Yondu says, hey man, this is gonna hurt real bad, and she's just like, do it, whatever. He flips a switch. All of these balls that they had used to laser into one point had spread all around the ship, and it turned into a giant fucking disco of laser beams that just wiped out a shit ton of these drones. And I thought that was the coolest fucking thing in the world. Then Mantis, the whole time, Ego's, like, knows that something's up, so the planet's trying to fight back. And Mantis reaches in and tries to put him to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And is successful. And then all of this shit happens, and then I think they all start talking about an escape. And right before Ego wakes back up, because, you know, obviously he's going to wake back up, I forget what it is. Something comes flying out of left field and fucking nails Mantis right in the head. Just fucking knocks her down, and which stops her from causing the sleep to Ego, and Ego wakes back up. I want to say maybe it was one of the drones that just kind of went flying out of the air.
Yeah, well, I think it was. But I love how when she gets knocked out, Drax, he's just like, she gets knocked out, she's laying on the ground. Mantis, watch out.
Yeah. Like, after it down, happened.
Like, everyone just kind of looks at him.
Oh, man. So then Ego comes down in his, you know, Kurt Russell form. And then there's an epic fight between Ego and Peter. And Yondu doesn't have a ship anymore. And then everybody's just trying to find their way back to the surface because Kraglin is on the surface with the Ravager ship ready for departure. This is where, you know, Rocket takes... is this after Baby Groot? Does Baby Groot ever get the bomb off?
This is... Nah, I gotta
no, he, oh, no, not at it's this a timer. No, he doesn't. Yeah, what happens next? I'm drawing a blank.
And this is the scene where I think everything starts going bad. And everybody slowly starts, like, kind of falling and failing left and right. Like, Drax gets out of there with Mantis, and then... the ship's coming in, then Ego grabs the ship that Yondu called for reinforcements. Then, you know, it starts flipping over. Groot's he's crawling through the cave, like he's crawling through Ego to go plant the bomb on his cortex, and then the walls just start like growing around him. He gets trapped in there with the bomb, and a couple other things happen, and that's when, you know, a couple other things I think what's her name fell. Yeah, they were
they were trying to climb
that pillar. I can't think of their name. Yeah.
No, they made it onto the pillar and they were flying up, but then they got
and then they got pinned.
They got absorbed. Well, yeah, everything started to close in around them.
Yeah, their hands got locked in, their feet got locked in, their Nebula and
Gamora.
Thank you. I can't.
Drax made it to the top. Because Peter took his little vest rocket pack thing off, put it on Drax, hit the button, set him up, and then he's like, "Oh, my nipples!" That's when we find out at the beginning that he doesn't wear these vests that Rocket made because he has sensitive nipples, of all things. And he actually is the only one who made it to the top at first. And as he was running to the ship, the ground itself started eating him and consuming him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Peter decides to amp it up a bit and start fighting back using his celestial powers, correct? And they have a knockout, drag-out fight where a bunch of shit happens, and essentially you see Kurt Russell, he starts forming, like, these rocks and stuff as, like, an outer shell into a larger Kurt Russell. Like, it's just a more prominent version of himself. And you see, like, these yellow blocks glowing around Peter. And because of a joke that is said earlier, it makes sense. But just as they're about to collide, you see Kurt Russell's figure flying forward. And then you see a giant motherfucking Pac-Man chomping down on the screen. And he just eats Kurt Russell. Man, leave it to Peter Quill to fight using Pac-Man. That essentially knocks both of them down to the ground. And I believe that's when everything starts to ease up a little bit, right?
Yep. The only thing about that scene that bothered me is it reminded me of Pixels, and that movie was awful.
Yeah.
I didn't mind Pixels, but we'll get into that one later. A lot of flashbacks, that's all.
That's in another topic we can discuss. Another
Pixels. We'll do a whole another, Pixels episode.
Another, not Pixels. Bad movies that we love.
And
movies
like
we love that our panned is awful.
And Pixels won't be on that list. I like how I keep looking over to my left to my TV, like, oh, is Pixels on? Nope. Alright. So everything starts to ease up. Drax is starting to get back up. Gamora and Nebula are starting to get more free. The ground is starting to ease up around Baby Groot, so Baby Groot slides and puts the the bomb on the brain and hits the right button after a proper amount of delegation as to which button he needed to push, as if he forgot, which gives them 5 minutes. He makes it back up to the surface, and he crawls. Baby Groot crawls onto Rocket, and Rocket gives Yondu a rocket chest piece thing and a spacesuit, essentially. He only has one of each, and then wishes him good luck, and flies off. Then there's some questionable things that happen on Rocket's part, where once he gets back to the ship, Nebula and Gamora, Drax and Mantis all make it back to the ship, and Rocket tells them to go, and he ends up, I think, electrocuting Gamora? Does he tase Gamora?
He
knocks,
shoots
her
in the back
out.
With like, the tase gun.
Yeah, which, you know, he'll answer for that at some point, I'm sure. But he pretty much, he wanted to take off. He said, hey, take off.
Yeah,
and
he's
everyone
like,
was wondering
I can't
where
lose
Quill
two,
was.
I can't lose two friends today.
Right.
Is what I think he said exactly.
He was thinking, I think he was actually thinking Peter was done for. There's nothing they could do.
Well, I mean, at that point, there wasn't. I mean, had it not been for Yondu later, I mean, there was nothing. He was done at that point.
I think he made the right choice as a, like, Rocket made the right choice as a leader.
Yeah.
Right then.
Yeah, I mean, it's either that or, okay, you stay there and you potentially all die. You know, So, I mean, as a leader, yeah, he made the right choice. It was a hard choice, but the leaders always have to make the hard choice. Mm-hmm. That's the movie trope in all superhero movies, making the hard choices. So they start taking off. Gamora was very much opposed to it, so Rocket tased her ass. Drax also started screaming at Rocket, but Rocket wasn't answering him. And then it comes down to Yondu and Peter, and then I think
the drone's chasing him.
Did the drone chase him?
Yeah, because remember the Drax thing on the chain?
That was way earlier, wasn't it?
No, I thought that was when they were going out, because doesn't he grab Peter and bring him in?
Don't remember.
It might not show
the chain thing. The chain thing was way earlier, but yeah. I think he somebody does get Peter. Or no, I don't think that. Do they ever show Peter getting on board?
I don't think they ever show Peter getting on board.
No, they don't.
No.
Thinking about it, because they show the whole Yondu scene. You know where he kind of sacrifices. They have their moment, and then it doesn't show them getting those two on board, I don't believe.
Right. So, essentially, what they do is Yondu straps the jetpack onto himself and then flies up with Peter to get him out of this giant chasm, which I'm sad. I'm not going to go back to it yet. I'll wait until near the end of the episode here. I did miss one of my favorite Yondu quotes, but we'll get back to that. So, essentially, Yondu flies up. He's leaving the atmosphere of this planet. He slaps this spacesuit onto Peter so he'll survive. And then there's some dialogue between them, and Yondu freezes to death, essentially, because he's in space without a spacesuit.
Doesn't he say something like, you might not have had a daddy, but you had a father, or something like that?
You might not have had a father, but you had a daddy. Or, yeah, something akin to that. You definitely get the impression that Yondu is more of a father figure to Peter, and both of them know it. You know.
Yeah.
He looked at him as more of a son, and Peter looked at him as more of a father. The next scene, you see Peter's back up on the ship, and they're lying stuff next to Yondu's body, and they're saying some words. And then they put him into, like, this really odd furnace-looking thing with, like, it's a spirally furnace that's, like, multicolored.
Mm-hmm.
And Kraglin walks over to Peter, saying that Yondu had something that he wanted to give him, and it was a motherfucking Zune. And he's like, there's, like, 10 hours of music on it, and Peter...
Everybody on Earth's using these.
God.
Peter was blown away. He's like, 10 hours? Because he's just used to a Walkman with a cassette tape.
Right. I mean, it's funny because he's never even experienced that. Because right. he left back in what, the 80s?
80s, yeah.
In the 80s. He's never even experienced that. And it's funny how, like, in modern days now, it's like Zune lost to iPods and nobody's even using iPods anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So Peter gets the Zune, and then Peter gifts Kraglin with Yondu's arrow. Which was a really emotional moment, I feel, too, because it shows you how loyal Kraglin really was to Yondu throughout everything. And then you see a bunch of fireworks happening out. You know, you see the dust from Yondu's body, which is multicolored at this point, floating out into space. And as they look, you see all of the Ravager ships.
Mm-hmm.
From all of the various Ravager communities and groups. And even though Yondu was technically exiled, it was really important that these ships showed up for his funeral, because it showed that they did eventually... They still considered him family. They still considered him a Ravager.
Yeah, he died. I think the word they said is, you know, He died doing the right thing, you know.
Right.
He made it right.
So he had like a real Ravager send off or something, because earlier in the movie
he had a Ravager funeral.
When Sylvester Stallone talked to Yondu, he told him that he wouldn't get one.
Right. Yeah, no matter what. He said, you're not getting a Ravager funeral. You're never gonna have our colors, you know, when you die.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I think when they called him in, they told him about why he did what he did.
Yep.
So they kind of forgave him, which was a good send-off for him, I think.
Yep. And then you got to see all of the various captains of the Ravengers.
Mm-hmm. You know, one was Miley Cyrus.
Was it?
It was. Yep. That was voiced, the chick was voiced by Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
Not the chick. The what was it? Hold on.
She had like that mask on. It was the only other one that they're not the only other one that talked, but the girl that talked.
Yep.
Wow, I did
and
not
Ving
know
Rhames.
That. I saw Ving Rhames.
Fuck Ving Rhames, man.
I didn't know one of them was Miley Cyrus.
She's the disembodied robot. She's like the robot head.
Okay. All right.
Was that? I thought that was Michael Clark Duncan at first. That the big black dude. I thought he was Michael Clark Duncan.
No, man, Michael Clark Duncan dead?
Yeah, he's dead. That's why I was like,
that was Ving Rhames.
Oh, that's Ving Rhames.
Yeah.
Oh shit! I did not know that Seth Green did the voice for Howard the Duck.
That makes sense somehow. That makes
it does.
Sense.
Oh yeah, Miley Cyrus was Mainframe.
That's a good casting decision.
Hmm.
Howard the Duck in that little group?
No, he was I think at the ending scenes chilling out.
Yeah, he was in between scenes at like a bar or something like that.
Yeah,
he was drinking.
He'll
in
never
case,
get another movie.
I hope he does. Either that or keep making cameos.
Yeah,
I fucking loved Howard the Duck. So essentially, that's pretty much where the movie ended. I believe was the funeral. And then they start going into some of the ending credit scenes, which there were various end credit scenes.
Mm-hmm. Five.
There were five of them?
Yeah.
Yep, there were five.
Well, I know one of them, Kraglin is trying to use Yondu's arrow. He's got a fin of his own now, and he's whistling, trying to get this arrow going up, and he gets it, and it hits the wall, and then he's trying again, and he whistles, and then it flies around a corner, and it stabs Drax in the chest. And Drax just starts screaming, and you just see Kraglin slowly back up, turn around, and walk away. Then there was...
There was a scene where they all reunited. That happened, you know. We saw them talking on the ships,
the captains of the Ravagers.
Yeah, but ironically enough, they're actually in a comic book. They actually form their own Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
So they were there. Yep. So those five, I think it was. They become their own version of the Guardians of the Galaxy in a way.
Were they? I thought they were actually one of the. I thought they were the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I think they were originally. And I think that's kind of what it was alluding to, like, of getting the band back together. I think they were the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
And I honestly think that they're going to get their own spinoff movie at some point.
That'd be cool. Hmm.
Especially now, since I think they're seeing how Star Wars is doing, alternating between, like, big titles and, like, side title things.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to at least get a movie where you're going to have, you know, especially after, you know, Avengers is done and things like that, you're going to get more Guardians, and then like it'd be Guardians of 3, then this, and then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what you're probably going to wind up getting in that order, like that Guardians 3, then that, and then like Spider-Man 2, and then something else, and then
That makes sense, because why cast such big name people? Like, why cast Miley Cyrus, Seth
for Green? A cameo, and like Sylvester Stallone, and you know, all these people for cameos. Also, too, if they make a Spider-Man 2, Ben Reilly. Should be a Ben Reilly movie. Do it.
Yes, God, please. God,
this
please,
is not,
Daddy.
We're not getting into Spider-Man on this. In any case, another one of the scenes was they went back to the Watchers, who was listening to Stan Lee, and then they just decided to wander off and walk away from him.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, like, come back. I'm not finished. Guys, come on.
There was another one where Peter walks into Groot's room, which is now covered in vines and filled with leaves.
That's my favorite post-credit scene.
And you see
Groot.
Yeah, you see Peter telling Groot he needs to pick up his room, and then you see a teenage Groot playing a video game, and he says, "I am Groot,
I actually, I would have to go and look. I think he's playing the game that Peter was messing around with at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, when they were trying to figure out how far away that thing was?
Uh-huh. I think he was playing that game.
Oh, man. And then the last scene is the one that kind of irritated me. But, again, overall, movie was excellent, highly recommended. But I did have a qualm with this part. Was we cut back to Aisha, the gold bitch, and one of her people comes up to her, and her hair's all down and disheveled, and she explains that she just created a new artifact that she's going to use to help destroy the Guardians, and then she says she's going to name him Adam. So the thing that, obviously, this is alluding to Adam Warlock, and this is his cocoon, which is the thing that she's talking about. Now, the thing that I had an issue with is purely a continuity thing. They might address it in the next one. They might not. But this cocoon that she said she created was also shown in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie in the collector's collection. So that's really the qualm I have is just it's a continuity error. There are several different things I'm sure they could do to solve this and or address it if they even choose to. I do know that there, I believe, will be a... There is already going to be a Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. James Gunn has already confirmed that he'll be returning for it. It will prominently feature Adam Warlock. I'm not sure when that one will be coming out. Probably a couple more years. But there will be a Volume 3.
Usually this, like, probably late 2019 or, you know, summer 2019 or summer 2020 is what I'm thinking, probably.
Right.
Yeah, they're usually going about 2 years now in between.
So, I can tell you right now, as of right now, this movie has scored an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is really high for Rotten Tomatoes.
What'd the first one get, out of curiosity?
Good question. I don't know. Hold on. of the Galaxy... 2014, it got a 91% overall. So, and
so 81, 91.
Yeah, it's currently 10% behind the first one, but it's also hasn't been out as long either. So the second one has a chance to raise.
If I had to give them my percent rating right now, it would be something like how it currently stands. I love this movie. Like, I love The Guardians of the Galaxy, but I like the first one, I think, better.
I agree. I had this conversation earlier. I think the second one is funnier, but I still liked the first one overall more. I find it hard to beat the originals in any movie franchise. It's, you know, you're getting all your character introduction and the building and forming of the team itself, and I don't know, maybe it's just me liking the origin stories of certain things, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and quickly referencing back to the thing that I missed, and I'm sorry that I missed it in the moment, was back in the fight scenes inside of Ego, there was a scene where Yondu has Peter... Like, Peter has his jetpack and whatever, I think, still, or he's holding on to Yondu... And Yondu's holding onto his arrow, and they're floating down. And Peter's like, you know, you look a lot like Mary Poppins. And Yondu's like, was he cool? And then Peter, you know, he gives that acknowledgement like, well, yeah, man, he was cool. And then Yondu just yells, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all! Oh, it was one of my favorite things from him. I love that.
Yeah. I love Michael Rooker.
Oh, yeah.
You're so good.
Anyway.
That's going to be like the standout quote from the movie, I think.
Probably.
The Mary Poppins one.
Probably.
Mary Poppins, y'all.
Mary Poppins, y'all. So
I've already seen memes with it.
That's the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 review. So just like any other review, we're going to go around the table real quick. Austin, would you... This is a dumb question because I guarantee we're all going to say yes. Would you recommend this movie to everybody?
Not to you stupid prudes named Aisha.
Yeah, not to any Aisha who's a stuck-up snobby bitch.
Yeah, but if your name's Aisha and you're not a stuck-up snobby bitch...
Give me a call.
You should go see this movie. Go give Webby a call. You guys go to the movie afterwards. You go back to his house. He give you a little... He give you Webby Volume 1.
And by Webby Volume 1, that means we're going to watch another Marvel movie and eat pizza.
Tight. There you go.
I'm fine with that. I mean...
Can I come over
and buy one movie, get a second movie free, and a pizza? I'm down.
Yep, let's do it. Devin, would you recommend this movie to people?
Absolutely, 100%.
As far as me, I agree with Austin. If you're a stuck-up, snobby bitch, go watch a different movie. I don't want you ruining my Marvel movies and getting all your snobby bitchiness all over my Marvel.
Go watch the Devil Wears Prada.
Go watch a DC movie.
Go watch a DC.
Batman versus Superman.
They need all the love they can get.
Extended cut. Go watch the Batman versus Superman extended cut.
Yeah.
And then go home and you give it
two thumbs up because you're like, oh, this movie explains the existential crisis. Then just shut the fuck up and sit down.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining me on this review of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and I want to thank all the listeners out there. Austin, where can people find you if they want to get a hold of you on the interwebs?
You guys can find me at DArrow3092.
And Devin, where can people follow you?
You guys can follow me at Jax Forest Walker, all one word.
God damn it. You guys can follow me at the Pack Pod. Devin, it throws me off every single fucking time you use my thing. You guys can follow me at Mr. Sexy Sandman, all one word. Anyway.
You guys can also follow me at Mingus.
You guys can follow me at John DMP.
And you guys can also check out our website, www.distractionsmedia.com. I think we talked about this last time. I don't need to do the www part anymore.
I like it, though.
But it's just, I'm old school, and I think all websites start with www. So I add that in.
You can go to HTTPS.
/://www.distractionsmedia.com.
On the website, you'll find everything from a cast and crew page to links to our other podcasts. Also, if you have any topics you want me to discuss on Simply Unprofessional, if you have any questions for me or anybody else that is part of the podcast, I can have them on for an episode just to answer questions. If you want advice, write in with the problems.
That's something I'm most excited about. I want to hear people that want advice.
Yeah, I'm willing to give advice all day. If you guys have any of those, feel free to write an email to simplyunprofessional@gmail.com. And until next time, guys, fuck Booster Gold.
Fuck Booster Gold. Tell him, Groot. I am Groot. There you go. He said it.
He did.
He said, fuck Booster Gold.
My man.